you think about this. First of all, the need didn't change. I mean, they needed Jesus Christ as much as the second, the third, and the fifth time that you talked to them, right, as they did the first time. Well, the message didn't change. It's the same gospel that we've had for 2,000 years. The Savior didn't change. Hebrews 13:8 says Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So we know that. The person himself didn't change physically. I mean, you're still talking to the same person there. What changed was the disposition of that person's heart. And that itself is affected by one or more factors. And here's just some brief things here. The circumstances that that person was facing. The level of stress and worry that they're suddenly under. The level of interference that they were facing before, which might be different now. Their season of life, as I'll mention in later on this lesson. Or maybe they're facing their mortality. And it doesn't even have to be their mortality. It can just be someone else's mortality, but it's deeply affecting them to get them to thinking about, you know, life is short and you got to do something with your life. So the first conversation, time itself was not the issue, but timing. Timing really was the issue. That intersection of the right message there with the right heart, those things coming together there, that's really what we mean when we talk about timing. In other words, the heart is now, when it wasn't before, now prepared to hear, prepared to receive, prepared to accept, prepared to act upon that message. Very much like the good soil that we just read about in the parable of the sower, okay? There's some people who hear the message, they're not interested. Other people think they're interested and they're really not. Other people are interested, but the other things come up, and then there's the good soil. And the good soil is when that message is planted in a soil that is receptive, ready to accept it, ready to take action, ready to commit, and nothing in the world is going to turn them away from that. And that's really what you want. That's the soil that you want. That's the kind of person that you're looking for ultimately. What I'm telling you is that you're not going to get that kind of person right away. Okay? And that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't sow seeds. We should sow seeds. But it does mean that you're not always going to see that up front. What we want to see, ideally, of course, is people just begging us to baptize them, which is kind of what we had with that woman that we baptized this morning, Sheila Ryan. I mean, she called up, and she was insistent. I want to be baptized. And she called up later because we were playing phone tag there, and she called back. She says, I want to be baptized. My opinion, from what I know, is that she would have been baptized by somebody if it wasn't us because she was ready. I mean, you could tell just talking to her. She's ready. She didn't want anyone to deter her in the least, and that's what we want. But those are few and far between. That's not normally what we get up front anyway. So teaching the gospel to any audience cannot be constricted to a specific time frame. You cannot assume that just because people have or just because you have a conversation with people or because you offer a class with people or because you offer some kind of discussion that everyone's willing, everyone's eager to jump on everything that you're talking about. I'm not making excuses for people either. I'll talk about that later on here tonight. I'm not trying to give someone a crutch and say, it's okay, you have every right to take your time. But it is a helpful perspective for us to embrace here. Just because someone's rejecting the message, the opportunity, even Jesus Christ right now, doesn't mean they're going to do so forever. There's probably some of us in this very audience who took our time, if you will, didn't listen right away, maybe put someone off for weeks or months, maybe even years. But nonetheless, we finally came around. And so we want to say the same thing about others. That doesn't mean they won't accept later, but that we cannot tell one way or the other up front. And we need to accept that and appreciate that. That will help us very much in talking with people. On the other hand, we can learn which times might be better than others and take advantage of those optimum moments when we see them. And that requires paying some attention to what's going on, paying some attention to the factors and the variables and whatever else is being considered here, okay? So remember I told you this morning that I really am an author from age 6, okay? And I told you about the little book I forgot to bring. Well, here it is, okay? So, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm going to talk about cars right now. But I want you to know that I am an authority on the matter, okay? I have written a book called The True Book of Cars, and it says, with more, underline pictures. Okay, and there are some actual factual pictures of cars on here. So I just want to let you know that I'm speaking not as an amateur, but rather as someone who really knows his stuff since he was 6 years old. I know that sounds a little bit, pretentious, but nonetheless, Anyway, let's just go on to it. We are going to talk about cars for just a minute here. And there's a reason for this, because I'm going to talk about timing here. You don't have to know about cars that much, really. All you have to know is this, that an engine has to be timed in order to work. That the crankshaft and the camshaft, the pistons, you know, the spark plugs, the distributor, you know, and all the things that are going on there, that all has to work together. You know, the pistons have to be coming up right when the spark is being given, so that they're, that explosion, that combustion, that's why they call it an internal combustion engine. There's an internal combustion going on so that it pushes that piston down, and they're all doing this in order like they're supposed to be. So when that's happening here, and it's all connected here together, then that's what we call timing in an engine, or engine timing. And it's interestingly all connected by a nylon or a metal belt, mostly nylon anymore, that is not is rather conspicuously called the timing belt. You couldn't care less about a timing belt unless, of course, it breaks. Now it's a big deal because your engine just stops. And isn't that interesting, that when there's no timing at all, then the engine can't work? And even if your timing belt is off, even one tooth, even one little, you know, nubbin there on the timing belt, then that also puts your engine off, and it suddenly is no longer efficient or is able to perform as it was meant to be. So there's a relationship between all the moving parts of an engine, right? And that's really what we're focusing on here, more than, you know, what is a crankshaft as opposed to a camshaft? Well, that's another discussion, although I am an authority on the matter. But nonetheless, all you need to see is that there is a relationship between all the moving parts. All the critical parts involved, there's a relationship. They all need to be working together. And that's what timing is. When timing is off, the engine won't run at all. It won't perform. It won't. The efficiency is seriously compromised. If the timing is set correctly, all the parts work together, the engine runs at optimum performance. And that provides a great illustration for us that I'll get to here in just a moment. Engineers who made the car engine provide the manual about how the car is supposed to run. And when all the parts in it are intact and timing is correct there, but it doesn't mean that your car's engine is running that way or that your car's engine is running at all. It just says if these parts are there and intact, not broken or defective, and if they are all timed perfectly, then your engine should run as it was intended to, at optimum performance. The fact is, engines never stay the same. They're always in a process of decline because of laws of nature and just the wear and tear of engines and friction and heat and everything else. And just because you put gas and oil and antifreeze in an engine doesn't mean that it's going to run forever, because engines are always changing. What I'm trying to point out here is nothing really about engines themselves, but just simply using that as an analogy. The human beings are much the same way. In other words, you can't just apply food and water and air to a person and he always functions correctly or the way that he should, because there's other factors involved. There's things going on. There's wear and tear going on, if you want to look at it that way. So the human heart, as you see on the screen, and human relationships really are about the synchronization or the timing of different parts coming together. And when those parts are off, then things don't work right. You can see a marriage that doesn't work right because the people are just kind of going in, you know, two different directions, or just aren't meeting. They're just not communicating. So when they're communicating, when they're meeting as they should, and in any relationship, when it is functioning well, of course, you've got two people who are working together, synchronizing, if you will, each other to the relationship itself. And that's a good thing to understand. But just as engines never stay the same, people also don't stay the same. And that doesn't mean they always get worse. Sometimes they get better. Or at least sometimes they're more receptive than they were before. We could say that. So the gospel, like the owner's manual of an engine, the gospel tells us how we ought to live, not necessarily how you are living. We're told in Matthew 5:48, Jesus says, you know, you're to be perfect as your Father is perfect. And you're thinking, well, I'm not perfect. Well, but he's telling you how you ought to live. He's not telling you how you are living, and he's not telling you how you're going to live next week. But he is telling you how you ought to live, how you were really designed to live by the owner himself, the creator himself. So no matter how much we study and pray and have fellowship, there's the gas, oil, and antifreeze, if you will, our life is constantly in flux. It is dynamic, which means it's ever-changing. And that means in itself that we're constantly having to respond to or adapt to what is happening all around you all the time. Notice I just said all the time. There's that physical time aspect. In earthly life, nothing stays the same forever, and no one stays the same either. And we can use that to our advantage, is really what I'm saying through this lesson. We who are not just Bible students, but eager to share the message with people, we can take this little bit of information and use it to our advantage. We can capitalize on this knowledge. Now, I'm not there yet, but I just want to throw that out for you to think about, okay? But first, before I get there, consider any long-term relationship, a marriage, family, best friend, etc. Over the years, each person in that relationship, including yourself, is going to be faced with changes in their circumstances. Some of these are going to be small. Some of these are going to be monumental. For example, your physical surroundings can change. Not just where you live geographically, but also the context in which you live. Because you moved or because where you live has changed. Maybe that quiet woods behind your house or that empty field next to your house is suddenly a crowded patch of houses and everything else. I think we've all gone through that, right? John and Verna, didn't you guys used to have a barn or something behind your house, and now there's a whole neighborhood there? See, I mean, that's, you didn't move, but things moved around you. And that's what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's not something you did, but it's something that's going on nonetheless. Or you go to school, you go to college, you go to vocational training, your education level changes, and that changes you. Because now it gives you a different perspective on the world. And it changes how you look at things or how you look at the world. It changes what we call your worldview. Kind of how you see the world through your eyes anyway. Or if you join the military, or get married, or have children, or buy a house, or change jobs, change careers, or if you become grandparents. I mean, all of these changes affect you directly, or affect people that you're talking to directly. They're not the same people that you talked to before those things happened. Something's different, okay? Their status has changed. Their social status, their marital status, their relational status has changed, and that changes them. Not only has the status changed, but now they have changed because of that change in status. And that's what we're just doing, is just being a perceptive to that matter. Or the body grows old and starts to wear down and always lets you know. Now you start to have procedures, and operations and all this invasive probing. I think you know what I'm talking about. And you're constantly fighting the effects of aging. Your skin, your gums, your joints, your energy is all kind of changing and shifting or just going away. And so that affects you. That doesn't just affect your body. It's not like, well, I'm the same person. What happens to your body does have an effect on you. It affects how you see the world. It affects what you do. It affects what you don't do, honestly. And so that has to be taken into account. Or maybe you're not seeing your own self growing old. Maybe you're watching your parents growing old, or your friends growing old, or your mentors growing old. I remember when I was much younger in the church, say around 20, early 20s there, there was a group of people that were my older mentors. I always thought they were, really old, like, 50 or something like that. Turns out they're about 35, 40 years old. But nonetheless, those people, they start to grow up and grow old. And I've been watching that over the years. And honestly, it's a really odd thing. Because I thought that they would stay that age forever. Did anyone ever think that their parents, like when you were 13, you thought your parents would stay there that age forever, right? And then what happened? They got old. And then, well, in some cases, they died. We didn't see that coming. Not when we were 13. And we just didn't see that coming. We didn't think about that. That wasn't something even part of the picture. Grandparents, maybe, really old grandparents, like great-grandparents, of course. But, when our parents start declining in that way, getting older and starting to fall apart and going through all these procedures and everything, I mean, that really wakes us up, doesn't it? And it has an effect on us. And what we're talking about in part here is kind of the change in seasons of life, the changes in age, changes in maturity, changes in experience, changes in perspective. As each factor changes, so it has an impact on the person who experiences those changes, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and to some extent even physically. They are not the same person as before. I don't like doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Just talk briefly about my story and my own timeline here, not to elicit any kind of don't know, pity or anything like that. But, you know, I just didn't have the great life that I thought I should have had. You know, sometimes things happen. But it's affected me, and that's what I want to share with you. So, you know, in 1970, my parents divorced. That had a great impact on me. Still does, honestly. In 72, 73, I was a good year and a half in a foster home, as well as my siblings. Different foster homes, by the way. 1977, I was baptized into Christ. 1982, I graduated from high school. Honey and I got married in 1989. 1991, 93, we had children, Larissa and Lothan. 1994, I changed careers, moved to Alaska. That was a big jump. That was a big deal. 1999, graduated from a university in Alaska. 2003, lost my brother to suicide. The same year, moved here to Kent. 2009, as well as 2011, my kids graduated from high school. 2012, I had a pretty major surgery, which changed me. What I'm saying is, at each point in my life, as I think about these things, I am not the same person as I was when I went into those, or before I encountered each one of those changes. I'm not the same person. These things have changed me. They have deeply affected me. In a very real sense, you know, the old self dies, and there's something new, not always welcome, but something new about us in all that. And what I'm saying here is I realize that if that happened to me, then it's also happening to other people. And so not only is life constantly changing who we are, but our place in life is also changing. So you're changing, but you're also changing in where you're at, positionally, if you will. Kind of that positional relative concept there. So we're really talking about two different but related things going on here. First is time, the second is timing. I want to talk about time first. This is the thing we all know about. Physical time really has to do with the passage of physical time and what happens in that physical time. Time being one of the most important driving factors in any single person's life. This is the thing that gets overlooked, right? We always think it's about money or economics or, you know, marriage status or, you know, having children. You know what drives people's lives more than anything is time. Because you're always looking at the clock and you're always counting off the days and you're always counting off the years. Why are you doing that? Because you're affected by time and you know that. It affects you. Not only is time moving along, but it's moving you along as well. Okay? You're moving along with time. If you want to look at it that way, whether you realize it or not. It's kind of like being on a raft in a river. The river is moving you along. Whether or not you're cognizant of it, you might be asleep on the raft, but you're still moving. And it's not slowing down. It's taking you somewhere. And over the course of that time, whether it's day or week or month or year or decade, one rushing into the next, life happens. And it creates a past that is filled with memories and people and experiences, both good and bad. And it provides for the present as well, where you are right now at this moment. And it anticipates the future, whether that future is in this life or maybe the future in the life to come. So time is a context in which our literal fleshly existence takes place. We might say this is literally where we flesh out our existence, is in physical time. And until we leave this earth, everything we do is bounded by time in which we have to do it, which again is happening or passing faster than you realize. I've used the example before. I think it's a great example to use, and that is that, you know, it's life is very much like you're in an airplane that's traveling 500 miles an hour. And when you're in that airplane, it doesn't feel like it, does it? I mean, you don't feel 500-mile-an-hour wind rushing through your face, and I mean, you're just sitting there drinking coffee. Well, that's what I do, you know, or reading a magazine or something like that, right? You're just sitting there just looking at your watch every once in a while, like, okay, how long till we get to Seattle or wherever you're going? You're not realizing that you are traveling 500 miles an hour. But time is like that. Life is like that. You're traveling at a high rate of speed, even though it seems like it takes forever for things to happen. And of course, that's how it is when you're young. And then when you get older, it's like time doesn't slow. Just try to slow down a little bit, right? So there's just a change in perspective, and it helps us to appreciate that. So physical time is something that we are supposed to take seriously. And Jesus does talk about that to some extent. Matthew 6:34, he says, you know, don't be anxious for tomorrow, or don't worry about tomorrow, or don't, you know, dwell on tomorrow. Don't be so infatuated with tomorrow that you forget about today, because this right now, this time right now is most important. You're not guaranteed tomorrow. But at the same time, he never said, don't plan for tomorrow. So we want to make plans for tomorrow, but we don't want to live into tomorrow. We want to live right in the here and now. We don't want to sacrifice today for the sake of our plans for tomorrow. Okay? It's kind of like forgetting all the good things that are going on right now because you're looking forward to, in a few weeks or a few months, a really nice vacation. And you're really not appreciating all the good things and the good company and the good times that you're having right now because your mind's already, you know, in vacation land. I know none of us have ever done that. Right. Okay, so we've all done that. We know what I'm talking about. And what Jesus is saying is, you know, vacation will come when it comes. What you should be concerned with is right now. What are you doing right now? And then Paul says in Ephesians 5, verse 16, he says, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time. Well, what time is he talking about? Well, the physical time, the time you have right now. What should we be doing right now at, you know, this time, 20 minutes after 6? We should be making the most of our time. Stop thinking about dinner, or stop thinking about what show you're going to watch tonight, or stop thinking about tomorrow and all the activities that you got going on, whatever they might be, or going to work, or, you know, what you're going to do, you know, next week. Stop thinking about all that. Think about what we're talking about right now, that you and I should be making the most of this moment right now. That's what Paul's talking about, making the most of your time. I'm not saying you were thinking about all those things, but I'm just saying, if you had been, then really you should reel that in and say, what's going on right now that is so important? Timing, however, is different. Timing has to do with where we are at in our human existence. In a sense, where we are positioned relative to everything going on around us. Or you could say it's the attitude, the inclination, or disposition of our heart as we are racing through physical time. Where is our heart at? And what is intersecting with that heart? That's a huge factor in dealing with evangelism, and I find this interesting all the time. I might give the same sermon, or a relatively same sermon, you know, back in 2005, and I'll give it now in 2016, and back in 2005 it got tepid response, and now it gets, whoa, a big-time response. Well, what happened? People changed. Okay, it wasn't that the lesson changed so much. Maybe it did a little bit, but it really wasn't the message of the lesson. What changed was, well, people, including myself, the one giving the lesson. I changed too. So that affected how I gave the lesson. I gave a covenant class in 2008, and hardly anyone came to it. Hardly anyone even remembers it. I give a covenant class in 2016, and we've had the highest attendance of any class I've ever given any time outside of, you know, Wednesday night or Sunday morning. What happened? It's the same class, okay, same teacher, a little bit pumped up material there, okay, we embellished that a little bit, but you didn't know that until you got to the class. So what happened? Change in timing. People changed. Circumstances changed. Life is changing. Politics are changing. The world is changing, and that affects us. And that changes then how we perceive certain subjects or perceive certain opportunities. We're not the same people we were in 2008, right? You might say, well, thank goodness for that. Well, okay, but still, my point is that you're not the same person. Hopefully you have improved, and that is something to consider in itself. In Matthew chapter 19, verse 16 and following, we have the account there of this rich young ruler. And remember why we call him that, because he was rich, young, and a ruler. Just not that complicated, honestly. Here Jesus is talking to this man, and you know how it goes there. The rich man says, well, what must I do? Jesus says, keep these commandments. Well, I've done that all my life. He says, there's one thing you lack. Sell your possessions, give them to the poor, and come follow me. Have treasure in heaven. And he walks away sadly because of that. And we always think, when we teach this, we think, well, there's a man who lost his soul. I don't know if he lost his soul. I only know what happened right there, because that's where the narrative ends. He walked away sadly, grieving because he had much property. But what happened next year, or 10 years from then, or, you know, later on in his life? He could have come around, right? It just wasn't the right time right then. We don't know what happened after that. Here's an example in the opposite, or I should say in the positive sense. In Acts chapter 6 and verse 7, we have a bunch of people becoming Christians here. They're converting because of the gospel message, and especially some of the Jewish priests. It says a great number of the priests were being converted. Well, these might have been the same priests that conspired against Jesus, for all I know. And remember, a lot of the Jewish people that are being converted are also those who may have been in that crowd that said, "Crucify, crucify," just a short time before. So what happened? How come they were yelling, "Crucify," or rejecting Jesus then, but now they're accepting him? Well, people change. The message didn't change. God didn't change. Jesus Christ didn't change. But the people change. And that's something to think about. People change. Romans chapter 5, verse 6, "For while we are still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly." God is very concerned about timing. He's not talking about just at the right date on the calendar. He's talking about optimum conditions for the reception of this message in the world. At the right time, God throws his message out into the world because he knows that that will be the optimum time for it to not only be grasped, but also to spread like wildflower. A wildfire, rather. And that's exactly what happened. We read of that there. Sometimes, the reason I'm bringing this up now is because sometimes we say, well, you know, I'm studying with so-and-so or talking with so-and-so, and they're just honestly not very serious about spiritual things. Maybe it's someone here talking with someone in your private life, and they're not very serious. He or she is just not very serious about that. Likely that is true if the evidence does indeed support it. They may be distracted. They may be failing to give full attention to the matter. They may be preoccupied with lesser concerns. They may be deceived with false teaching. They may be overwhelmed with health issues, family crisis, ailing parents. They may have just learned they have cancer. That's going to affect how they receive or whether they receive that message. In other words, what we're saying is that their heart is not open to listening, at least at that moment, because life is interfering with the reception. Or it may be that Satan himself is interfering with the reception. You can read in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3 and 4, it says there that even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, in whose case the god of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelieving, so that they might not see the light of the gospel, the glory of Christ. And so think of what Paul is saying there. It's not the message. It's not the problem of the message. And it's not the problem of the messengers. It may be Satan himself doing what he does as Satan that is interfering with the process of that message's reception. The point here is that when we share the gospel with someone on any level, we're facing these two factors. First of all, physical time. The time in which you have to do or to say what you have to say, I should say, and the time for the other person to make a decision. And then we're also facing timing, the disposition of a heart which affects a receptionist, a receptiveness, I should say, of that message. So, having said all that, we need to recognize that our efforts to help someone get their soul right with God may not be rejected because you do not care, or I do not care, or the gospel is ineffective, or the person's not in need, but it's a timing issue. Just like that engine where everything's off kilter and out of sync, it's not going to function correctly. It's a timing issue. My advice, for what it's worth, is when you recognize that a person is not interested over a period of physical time, you've noticed this, do not keep pounding away and wasting your physical time with that person. Find someone else who will listen. But at the same time, don't give up on that person, because as circumstances change and as the world changes and that person changes, their mind and their heart may change as well. And you just don't know that. So give them all benefit of the doubt that they will change for the better, in the sense that they will be more receptive later than they are right now. You and I, as teachers of the message, ought to be more perceptive to what's going on than the person that we're talking to. Remember, we said that last week. We ought to know why we're talking, what we're talking about, and where this is all going. We ought to know that. And the other person, whether they know that or not, doesn't really matter. It's irrelevant to what's going on. And what that means is that we ought to see things for what they are and not just throw in the towel because, you know, they weren't listening. And we go, well, nobody ever listens to me. Really? Nobody ever listens? That's not true. Some people do listen. It's just that more often than not, they may not seem to listen up front. Okay? That's just the world we're living in. Sharing the gospel rarely results in a baptism in the first conversation. That's just the world we are living in now. That's what you're facing. I'm telling you straight up. It rarely does. More often than not, what you're doing is you're sowing seeds. And that's not a bad thing, but it's an important thing, and it needs to be done. But you're not always going to reap the benefits of that right away. Here's a passage I have. It's not in your notes there. If you want to write it down there, it's fine. John chapter 4, verse 36, Jesus talking with his disciples. John 4, verse 36 through 38. Jesus says, "Already he who reaps is receiving wages and is gathering fruit for life eternal, so that he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. For in this case, the saying is true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you have not labored. Others have labored and you have entered into their labor." In a nutshell, what Jesus is saying is you might be benefiting from the efforts of people who sowed seeds years and months and you know, time before, even before you were born. You might be benefiting from that. Or you might be the one who's sowing seeds now, and other people will benefit from all the work that you've done. And he says it doesn't matter, because whether you sow or whether you reap, whether you're the sower or the harvester, it doesn't matter as long as you're participating in the work of God, as long as you're a partaker of the gospel, as Paul says. That's what's important. So whether we're on the beginning end or the ending end or, you know, whatever end we're on, it really doesn't matter as long as we're involved in the process. So sometimes you'll come to someone will come to you and they'll say, "I'm ready to be baptized." Well, you're probably benefiting from a lot of work someone else did. Or you might start the conversation, first time anyone ever heard about baptism or Christ or the gospel, and you're starting it, and it won't be until years later that they finally come around, but it'll be someone else that they come around to. And you might get frustrated with that. And what I'm telling you, what Jesus is telling us, is don't get frustrated. That's just how it works. And God's happy with that. God's concern is not who gets credit for what. God's concern is another soul is saved. And that's what our concern should be. Another soul is saved. On the other hand, I'm not trying to justify people taking their time. I'm simply recognizing what's happening. The truth is, it doesn't matter whether your heart is fully receptive or completely unmoved. If you're not in a right relationship with God, then you are in a state of alienation or separation from God. You are a sinner who is outside of the covenant of grace and mercy, and that is not going to help you. So I'm not saying, oh, if you've got a timing issue, it's okay. You can play the timing issue card if you want to, you know, deliberately, consciously, you know, like a game you're playing or something like that. Well, you know, it's just not my time. I'll, you know, maybe I'll come around later. You can do that if you want to, but I'm saying that's a pretty dangerous way in which to live. Regardless of timing, time itself, physical time, is running out. And since we know this, and since we know that what that means and the results of that, that ought to motivate us to act, whether we're the ones teaching or the ones listening. It ought to motivate us to act. Point is here, we're not sharing the gospel in a pristine vacuum where there's no interruptions, no distractions, no contrary teachings, etc. We're always fighting for physical time, aren't we? We're always fighting someone else's calendar. Have you noticed that? I mean, when you sit there and say, "Hey, I'd love to sit down and talk with you," what is the first thing they do? "Well, let me check my calendar." So you're not only fighting your calendar when you're available, but you're also fighting someone else's calendar. And you're also struggling against the timing of that person's heart. And you say, "Well, then it's difficult, and who can do this?" So it's difficult, yes, but it's not impossible. When it comes to salvation, God is extremely interested in that subject. And so that's why Jesus says, you know, with men, this thing, this salvation is impossible. With God, all things are possible. He already knows whose hearts are ready. He knows where the good soil is. So if there's anyone here waiting for everything in their life to settle down before they devote full attention to their moral responsibility to God, let me just say this. I realize that your heart may not be ready at this very moment, but you would be wise to start preparing your heart to receive God's message. Because the subject of your salvation, not mine, but yours, the subject of your salvation is far more important than anything else in this life. You know, Jesus gives this message here in Luke 13, you know, "Strive to enter through the narrow door. Many, I tell you, will seek to enter and will not be able." And he goes on to say, you know, that the opportunity is coming to a close. You only have so much physical time in which to make a decision. I'm not saying that to frighten anyone into obedience, but simply to remind you that you don't, literally do not have all the time in the world. And for Christians who are frustrated with a lack of response, let me say this, that your responsibility is not to convince everyone of the truth, but rather to speak the truth in love. Speak the truth and speak it in love, always acting in that person's best interest. That is what finds favor with God. Let God deal with the people who resist and reject and put them off and put you off. Let God deal with those people. Your job, as it is given to us, our job as evangelists, those who proclaim the good news in whatever context, our job is to speak the truth and to speak it well and to speak it in love and let people do with that what they will. I'm not saying be unconcerned with how people receive that. What I'm saying is there's only so much that you can do, and recognize your limitations. I hope this lesson has been helpful in at least giving us an understanding of what's going on, some of the dynamics, if you will, going on with people when we talk with them, talking to people. I hope this lesson has opened our eyes to what's really driving people in one way or another. If there's anyone here tonight that wants to take advantage of the invitation I just gave, to take the gospel, take advantage of its offer, to become a Christian, or to get serious about the gospel. You've already become a Christian, but you haven't been very serious about it. Now's the time. Today is the day of salvation. I don't know if you'll have tomorrow. This would be the time in which to act. Do something if you need to as we stand and sing the song that Bob has selected for us here tonight.